All right, we're going to talk today. We're getting ready to enter into the fall season. If you are a child going into fall, it means school is starting, and you're like, oh. If you are a parent and fall is starting, you're like, oh. Because it is just so beautiful when the structure comes and the system comes and everything's back to normal. But honestly, for all of us, fall tends to be a very busy time. School is starting. Kids' sports are starting. Events are starting. Like, it seems to me like over the last 10 years, September has gotten to be a busier and busier and busier and busier month. And on top of that, it appears to me that no longer, for most of us, is summer a time that seems like real rest is happening. Lots of things are happening. They are outside things, but there is a lot of busyness. It just seems to me, and I don't have any data for this, but it seems to me like we are just filling our summers up and then filling the fall up and ending up being very wildly busy, busy people. And so I want to pause over the next couple of weeks and hit a couple of topics, hopefully that will help us go into the fall effectively. One of them tonight is this idea of finding rest in our lives. So that's what we're going to talk about. Of course, then come September, we are going to be talking a lot as a church about sex and sexual identity. And actually, Pastor Kurt is going to be talking on a couple of the Wednesday nights. So I'm super excited about that. We've been prepping for this month for the last 2 years because we really want to have, we want to say what God wants us to say in the way that God wants us to say it. So I'm really excited. I am convinced that this is one of those things that we're going to talk about that can bring freedom into people's lives on a whole new, fresh level if they let it. And so I'm super excited about that. But tonight, I want to talk about rest. Rest. I was looking through the Bible earlier this week, and this is a verse from Mark chapter 2. Mark chapter 2 has this kind of complicated story, but the story is something like this. So the Sabbath was a really big deal to Jewish people in Jesus' day, and the idea of the Sabbath is an old, old idea. If you've ever read the beginning of the Bible, like the first couple of pages, it tells the story of the creation of the world, and it says that God created the world in 6 days and then rested on the seventh day, and that set a tone for the way work and rest, sort of the rhythm of work and rest that were supposed to happen for humans. People were supposed to work 6 days and rest one. And by the time of Jesus comes into play, the time Jesus is on earth, they have made a really big deal about this idea of Sabbath or that rest day. And so a whole bunch of very religious people, like really spiritual people, the Bible calls them Pharisees, which just, they were sort of the most religious people in any given community. And so a bunch of Pharisees are really trying to honor this idea that God said you need to rest on the sixth, on the seventh day. And so they see Jesus and his followers walking down the street, and as they're walking down the street, Jesus' followers are just grabbing at the grain from a bunch of plants that are on the side of the street, and they're breaking the grain up with their hands and eating it. They're just kind of honestly having a snack. And the Pharisees say, hold on, that is literally work. Like, when we talk about work, the kinds of things we mean are things like harvesting crops, right? Like, we're all farmers here. Harvesting crops is actually work. Why is it that you're letting them work on the day that God says they're supposed to be resting? Now, while this may seem a little nitpicky, I can see where they're coming from. If this, you got to remember, like, when God set rules for his people, God was frequently pretty nitpicky about it. Like, there's this one moment where he's instructing his people how to offer incense to him, And some folks decide to take it on themselves to come up with a different incense recipe. And God sends fire out of the altar to consume them. And that's the end of them. When God says, do it this way, he really means it. And so the Pharisees are saying, no, 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 God said we need to rest on the seventh day. We know how God feels about being disobeyed. So what on earth are you doing, claiming to be a religious teacher, but letting your followers completely break the rules? Like, we don't understand that. And particularly this really important sort of signature rule about rest, about Sabbath. What's going on? And in this moment, Jesus says to them, and this is Jesus' comeback to all of this. Jesus says, the Sabbath, that is the day of rest, was made to meet the needs of people, and not people to meet the requirements of the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord, or in charge, even over the Sabbath. There's a pretty simple principle here. He says the Sabbath was made because people need it. In other words, God instituted a day of rest because people need a day of rest. God didn't create people in order to make sure that there was somebody to follow the Sabbath rule. He created the Sabbath rule because people needed it. It would be the equivalent of saying, imagine if somebody thought that the only function of a car was to get driven around as fast as you possibly could so that you could get it to its oil change, because the real thing that matters is Meineke. And so cars exist only to make sure that there's something to change the oil in. Right? Like, that doesn't make any sense. The point is that cars exist to transport us from place to place, and in the process of taking care of our cars, we need places that can change the oil. The oil change place exists for the car, not the other way around. Jesus is saying the same thing about this rule about rest. He's saying, people need rest. So we don't need to be super nitpicky about it, and he's also very significantly claiming authority over this, and that's a different issue that we could talk about later. But I really want to talk about this idea that God instituted a day of rest every single week in your life because you need it. Because you need it. That's the idea we're going to drive at today. And so with that in mind, I want to start at the opposite end of the spectrum. I want to think for a moment about busyness. I want to think about busyness because I think that we have developed some very interesting non-traditional approaches to busyness. Non-traditional busyness. Now, when I was a kid and I thought about busyness, I thought about my dad. My dad, we lived in Rhode Island, just south of Providence. My dad worked in Boston. He worked in Boston 6 days a week, so he would get up, drive with traffic into Boston for somewhere between an hour and a half and 3 hours, depending on how bad traffic was. He would work a full day's work, and then he would turn around and drive with traffic an hour and a half to 3 hours drive home, depending on how bad it was. And he worked so hard to put food on the table in our home. And that was a busy man, because that wasn't all he did. He also managed to keep the lawn cut and keep our house taken care of. And for the life of me, he managed to drive me to school every day. And when I got into high school and threw a fit because he said I needed to take the bus, he actually changed his routine in order to keep taking me as a high school kid to school because I was too whiny to take the bus. He also managed on his one day off to coach my soccer and baseball teams and still have time to take me out to breakfast almost every single week my entire life. That is a busy, busy man. But when we think about busyness now, let's fast forward, that was 30, 40 years ago. If we fast forward to now and we think about busyness, I just want you to stand up if you are holding your phone right now. Go ahead, stand up if you're holding your phone right now. Stand up if you've been holding your phone in the last 60 seconds and just happened to have put it away. Yep. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this. Stand up if you have a phone on you that is easily accessible. The vast majority, if you can sit down, one of the ways that busyness has invaded our lives, and by the way, I mean, I was standing up too. You guys all saw me take my phone out of my pocket because it was buzzing and put it over here. So nothing wrong, just to be clear, nothing wrong with having a phone, nothing wrong with living your life with the benefits of a cell phone. But it is incredibly easy for some of the gifts that that phone gives us to create artificial busyness in our lives. Artificial busyness in our lives. Here we go. Social media. Social media. Just think about this for a moment. I went to some non-Christian websites to find out what it might mean to be addicted to social media. I didn't want to be super obnoxious about this, so I literally went to things like Cosmo just to see what everybody's saying about social media. Here are the things that suggest you might be addicted to social media, copied straight from all these kind of random social magazine kinds of things. Your friends or parents or significant others have told you at some point that you can remember that you were mindlessly scrolling through one of your apps in the middle of a conversation. So somebody's talking to you, and instead of looking them in the eye, you're doing this. This is that moment where I should have had everybody with a cell phone stay standing, and you could only sit down if you had never done that. But I'm not going to do that because that's mean, right? But, right, your conversational posture is something like this. Which, by the way, happens in restaurants it's crazy to me, the time. I literally had to say it's crazy to me in the middle of it because that's how amazing it is to me. When I see a group of 3, 4, 5 people sitting at a table in a restaurant and they're not actually talking to each other, they're all scrolling. So they're paying like $150 or whatever so that they can sit there and not talk to each other. That's great. Number two, if you wake up in the middle of the night, you check social media. That is a sign that you might be addicted to social media. Number three, you've actually seen every post that you could possibly see in a particular 24-hour period. In other words, you get to the end. You know, like you've scrolled so much, you've gotten to the end. You check your data usage, social media accounts account for the greatest amount of your data usage. This is another one I thought this was interesting. Across the board, every single place that I looked said you might be addicted to social media if you check social media before you brush your teeth. You're all laughing because you can't imagine somebody doing that, I know. Right? Check social media before you I thought, that might be me. So I thought this was great. You have more social media apps on your phone than productivity apps on your phone. I thought, oh, yeah, that's probably a lot of us. Because you're thinking to yourself, what exactly is a productivity app, right? A productivity app is like something to help you organize your life, like a calendar or a to-do list or something in that genre. And you're thinking, I should get some of those. That's great. I'm not hitting on social media hard right now because I think it's evil or something. That's not my point. I'm just suggesting that in our world, we are exceptionally busy, and some of it is artificial busyness. We could put this down, except two out of every three people in America have a heightened sense of anxiety if they are away from their phone. That's 100% true. That is what the statistic is. 66, two out of three. If we drop that down to under 25, it's 75% of Americans have heightened anxiety when they are away from their phone. 80% of teenagers sleep with their phones. 84% of Americans believe they can't go one day without their phone. Again, not saying that the phone is a bad thing. I use my phone as much as any of you. But when we think about rest, one of the things we have to start with is what is making us so busy? And I think that there is a lot of artificial busyness that is feeding into our lives. Artificial busyness, where we're just training ourselves to constantly be still. There aren't still moments anymore. I was watching my own daily routine. All the moments that would have been still, quiet moments in the past, even 10, 15, 20 years ago. Today, I got up. As soon as I got up, I'm not honestly a huge social media person. If you've ever messaged me on Facebook, there was a 50-50 chance that I got it within a week because that's just not my thing. I try really hard to remember to check it, but it's just not my thing. But I listen to audiobooks all the time. So I get up, I am three steps out of bed, and my earbuds are in while I'm shaving and brushing my teeth and all of that stuff. That would have been quiet downtime in the past. It is not for me. Then I come downstairs, and I'm eating breakfast, and instead of just sitting there eating breakfast, I was watching something while I was eating breakfast, and so that wasn't really downtime for me. And then I hopped in my car, and the earbuds went right back in, and I'm listening to something, and so that's not really downtime anymore. And it is safe. I only have one ear in, I promise. But I know the rules. But then I walk here. Every second of my day, I'm filling with some sort of stimulus, and it's great stuff. Like I'm reading a great book right now, and it's really inspiring, and it's helping me connect with Jesus more. And I love it, but it's still stimulus. It's still making me more busy. Moments that would have been downtime a generation before me are now no longer downtime. I'm just artificially busy. So there's some artificial busyness that's happening in our lives. But there's also, and this is important, there's what I would think of as historical busyness. Here's what I mean by that. I mean baggage. We're busy not because of what I'm doing in the present, but because of the things from my story that I'm dragging into the present that I've never dealt with. I love the old analogy that everything we drag into the present is like a beach ball when we're in a pool that we're trying to push down underneath the water. And so if every single thing I drag in from the past, from my past into the present, is like a beach ball I'm trying to push underwater, I can be very busy in a completely empty moment just trying to push all the beach balls back under the water. Love that. I love that picture. Some of us, we're busy because we're just dragging our past into the present. Some of us are busy for all sorts of other reasons. We're busy because of a sense of obligations, what people want us to do. We're busy because we're anxious when we're not busy. I think that a lot of us, including myself, like if I'm being completely honest, this is one of my issues. I get anxious if I'm not doing something. I get insecure if I'm not doing something. I start this is literally pushing the beach ball into the water, but all the voices that remind me of who I don't want to be, I can hear them louder if I'm quiet. And so I keep myself busy so I don't have to hear them. With all of that in mind, I want us to think today about rest. Because God wants you to be able to rest, to take a break, to not have to push the beach balls under the water for the millionth time, to not be enslaved to your technology, to not be overextended. So we're going to talk about rest tonight. I am super excited about this. One of the key verses about this, Matthew 11, 28 and 29, says this beautiful thing. It says, this is Jesus talking. And Jesus says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Does your mental picture of Jesus' leadership in your life, does it include a God who is inviting you into a place of rest? Is that what you think of when you think of God's leadership in your life? Is God inviting you into, now, I'm not saying that there aren't challenges along the way. I'm not saying, we all know, and I'll keep coming back to the phone, not because I'm picking on it, but because it's an easy example. I could rest more without my phone. But to give up my phone, I would have to deal with some anxiety, some stress. I'm shining a light in somebody's eyes. I can, like, see it. But I'd have to give up some anxiety, some stress. I'd have to deal. It would be challenging to do it. But if I could allow myself to enter into the challenge, I think we all know I would find rest on the other side. That's the invitation Jesus has. That's why he uses this great language in there, in those verses, of the idea of a yoke. Do you guys know what a yoke is? It's the thing that keeps oxen on the path they're supposed to be on while they're working. So it locks the oxen in so that he or she has to go the direction that the master is forcing it to go. We often think of rest as something we get when we're free, but that is not God's underlying fundamental assumption. It's very American. There's something fundamentally good and healthy about perfect, inviolable freedom. But you know, I watched my kids this summer, and we had these 2 days. I had my closest friends in the world. They live out in Oregon. They came over. Some of you guys got to meet them. They came over. There were going to be 9 people in my house, which is too many people for my house. So we got tons of things for the kids to do, 5 kids in my house. So we made sure that, like, the Wii was set up. We made sure that we had games. We made sure that we had, like, stuff to do s'mores in the evening. We made sure that we, like, I mean, we went as hard as we could into making sure there were plenty of activities in our home, because my closest friends live on a farm. They're used to being able to, like, wander for acres. And we were like, well, you can't do that in Lynn. So we better figure out a plan. So we're at our house, and the kids did wonderful, and they had a great time. But you know, like, 2 hours into having 65,000 options, the kids are wildly bored. The next day, we take them to the beach. We give them each a bucket. And they sit there and dig in the sand for hours and never get bored. Why is it that they got super bored when they had 65 choices, and when they had 0 choices, they didn't get bored? Because freedom isn't restful. That's why. Freedom is tiring. Having to make choices. You know, I have this conversation with people all the time where have you ever just wished God would make your choices for you? Why? Because choosing is hard. Because choosing is something that grown-ups do because it's exhausting. And yet somehow we want to be free. And God says, no, no, no. I want to put a yoke on you, but it's a yoke that will lead you to rest. I want to direct you. I want to lead you. If you let me lead you, you will be able to rest. So this other verse that I think is amazing, this is from the book of Hebrews in the New Testament, says, so there is a special rest still waiting for the people of God. For all who've entered into God's rest have rested from their labors, just as God did after creating the world. So let us do our best to enter that rest. Just deeply reminded that God's rest is fully available, the Bible says. There is, in fact, a rest that God has. It's the rest that God has been resting since day number 7. God knows how to rest. He's not a compulsive worker. He's a hard worker. He's a passionate worker, but he's not a compulsive worker. And so he's able to rest. And you and I are invited into the rest. And so the question this verse raises, or the challenge this verse, like, let's do our best to enter that rest. The implication is it's going to cost something. The analogy, by the way, that this is coming from is not just the 7 days, but has anybody been to church here in the last, like, 5 months while Pastor Kurt talked about Exodus? All right, so we've talked about Exodus, which is, like, this amazing series, and we're pausing, and we're going to come back to it probably next year, but the Exodus is actually just the very beginning of a story. It's the beginning of a story about God's people, the Israelites, getting out of slavery, but then eventually being given this wonderful, glorious, promised land. So what happens is great. They have all these miracles happen. They have, like, plagues happen, and the Red Sea parts, and all these wonderful miracles happen, and God miraculously delivers his people from slavery. He takes them through the desert. He gives them laws and says, you're going to be my special people. He takes them to the edge of a land and says, this is the best land. And it is. It's literally the best tract of land in the entire area that he's about to give them. And he says, here, you're right on the edge of it. And they send out some spies and say, okay, you guys, go take a look at the land that God has promised us. And the spies come back and they say, here's the thing. There's, like, giants in the land. And the people of Israel, who just a year or two before, not that long ago, had just been delivered from slavery miraculously, who had seen the Red Sea part, who had seen God send hail and blood and all sorts of stuff to make sure his people got free. They heard about the giants and they said, oh, no, I guess we can't do this. And they walked away, and the entire generation ended up dying in the desert. Sad, sad story about a group of people who chose not to enter the rest that God had promised them. And so this verse that is building on that story and sort of spiritualizing it to apply to our lives is saying, God wants to do two things in your life. He wants to bring you out of slavery in your life, slavery to sin, slavery to addiction, slavery to pride, slavery to selfishness, slavery to whatever it is that is owning you. And he also wants to bring you into a place of rest in your life. But at the edge of the resting place, you're going to have to make a decision. Do you trust God to lead you into the rest? Or are you going to walk, are you going to turn around and walk back into the desert and say, I don't trust God, so I'm going to be stuck? Because you get to do that. One of the deeply disturbing parts of being a follower of Jesus is that Jesus will let you not follow him. It's like the scariest part of the whole thing to me. So you're at the edge of the most restful place your life could ever be, and you're 3 steps away, and if you can just trust Jesus and take those 3 steps, you'll be gold for the rest of your life. Jesus is not going to force you to do anything. Just, do you trust him? He's just standing there. Do you trust me? Do you want to come rest? It's not a question of does the rest exist. It's a question of will we trust him to follow him into the place of rest? Or are we going to trust all the old things? Because this is what Israel did at this point in the story. They actually started saying things that they had said before, like, boy, it would be so nice if we could just go back to being slaves. Boy, it'd be so nice if we could just be back in Egypt where everything was safe. And as absurd as that sounds, I will tell you I have walked with enough people in their spiritual life that the old slavery starts sounding nice at some point, and you have to make a decision. And Jesus is saying, no, 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 there's rest available. Rest. And so the question we have to ask ourselves is, how do we find rest? I just want to make two simple points about how to find rest. This isn't everything that could be said, but it's two really important points about how to find rest. Number one, be still. Be still. Psalm 46 says, be still and know that I am God. An earlier psalm, I think it's Psalm 8. I didn't write it down, but Psalm 8 says this wonderful verse that's one of my favorites in the whole Bible. It says, I can lie down and rest because I know that you are God. The heart of it is, did you ever notice this? You were designed by God to cease any kind of control over your life for at least a third of the day. Ever thought about that? God made you to be asleep for about 8 hours a day. That's a third of the day. God actually designed you to fully and completely surrender control of everything that's going on in your life every single day. You are in the habit of practicing giving up control. And for a lot of us who have ever struggled with sleep, it's because we struggle with giving up control. Not all the time, and I certainly am not going to universalize that. I will say it's true for me, and it's true probably for some of you. You can't sleep because your mind is racing, and you're like, no, 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 I got to do this, I got to do that, I got to do this. And God's, the wonderful verse there is, I can sleep because God is God. The initial verse I read, be still and know that I am God, the idea of it is just stop and know, like actually take the time to remind yourself to rest in the reality that God is God. One of my favorite songs as a kid, it was a pop Christian song, started with this like rain sound and somebody's shouting. And what he is shouting, and I have no idea what this had to do with the song, and I don't remember anything else about the song, but it's somebody was shouting, you ought to stop playing God because you are not good at it and the position is taken. I like that. You ought to stop playing God because you are not good at it and the position is taken. That is an invitation to rest. We just need to let God be God. God has the authority. God has the power. God never sleeps. He never rests. We just need to stop.